Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. And thank you for being patient with us this afternoon as we worked through a couple of little technical issues at the station, but luckily it all got reconciled. So before we get started with today's show, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the lovely folks over at Markham Search. Markham Search offers premier recruiting solutions across the United States with offices in New York, California, Massachusetts, to name a few areas, and provides temporary as well as direct hire staffing solutions. So a special thank you to our sponsors. And today I'd like to thank Spencer Smith for joining us on the show. Spencer is the founder of SpencerXSmith.com and social media marketing company Amplify, as well as an instructor at the University of Wisconsin and Rutgers University. He was formerly a vice president of sales for two Fortune 100 companies. He's been called a social media expert by Forbes, and his company, Amplify, is the winner of the 2016, 2017, and 2018 In Business Magazine Executive Choice Award for Social Media Consulting Company. Spencer spoke at over 74 different events in 2017, including a presentation at the New York Stock Exchange in September. His debut book, Rotema, The ROI of Social Media Top of the Mind, was featured in Forbes in late 2017 and is an Amazon bestseller. Spencer contributes articles to both Marketing the Law Firm and various American Bar Association publications. Spence, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jen. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm so glad that despite the universe and things working sometimes where you have little glitches, it's amazing with technology that we can have listeners around the world and be able to provide this. But at the same time, sometimes technology provides a couple obstacles here and there. So I'm glad it all worked out.
Yes, indeed.
So tell me a little bit about your story, Spence. How did you come to be a social media expert? Did you always know this would be your path?
I didn't, Jen. I was a salesperson for a long time in financial services. And before I did that, I was in IT, working at IBM and a few other places. So I had this weird kind of IT and financial services sales background. And I saw this whole social media thing coming along and said, wow, this is a really good way to reach a lot of people very quickly. But for the companies that I worked for at the time, they said, hey, don't use this thing because we don't know how to do it through compliance. And it was one of those things where I knew it and I couldn't have it. And that made me want it more, right? So January 2015, I left the securities business, gave up my licensing, and then was just able to go headlong into social media. And what I discovered, because I didn't have any kind of predispositions with social because I never really used it before. So technically, I was a very late adopter. Just looked at it and said, wow, this is really the best way ever to scale business development efforts, recruiting efforts, and probably for your audience, more personal branding efforts, right? How do we disambiguate who you are and get people to know who you are? So that's what I've been doing ever since.
Wow, that's incredible. And did you ever have moments of doubt? I mean, to leave probably what was a good paying job where you had stability and security and kind of jump off into the unknown?
I'd be lying if I didn't say I did have some doubts, but it was, I felt like that's kind of where that, you know, the classic analogy where the puck is going. That's where I thought I could come back eventually after learning this stuff to older industries like financial services or law or banking, where I'd done some work before as well, and say, hey, this whole thing that you maybe haven't figured out yet, I've done it and I've proven it to work for myself. And I hope to do that same thing for you. So once I knew it worked for myself, I had a lot of confidence in delivering that message to other people also.
So tell me about that. When you say you tested, it sounds like you beta tested some of these theories. How did you come up with your theories and basically prove that they worked before you took it out into law firms or financial services companies?
That's a really good question, because it is one of those things where if you don't attach the right key performance indicators to something, oftentimes you can get bad information, right? So I looked at it more from a business development or a salesperson and said, what would be a successful outcome? as opposed to getting bogged down in things like vanity metrics, like likes and comments and shares and that kind of thing. It's really about, are people thinking about you versus not? And are those people within your target market, knowing that you perhaps can go into this room where they're going to be at a networking event, or maybe reach out to them via email or LinkedIn or whatever it might be, and say, how can we in fact turn this into business, as opposed to just feeling good about getting a bunch of likes on a share on LinkedIn?
So let's talk about likes and about business. Is it, what do influencers have to do with it? Because it seems like some people just have magic. Some people, whether we're talking about that certain business, like you look at Apple products or something to that effect, or you look at certain influencers out there on social media, where whatever they do just seems to be gold and does seem to get results, whether it's business, likes, interactions. What is that certain je ne sais quoi, that certain something?
I think it's people understanding which market they're serving. And if we can go back, because I'm 42, so I know that a lot of your listeners are probably in this age range where they're not, you know, 21 and have grown up with this stuff. But if we look at, to us, who the famous people were when we were growing up, oftentimes it was a pretty small list and it was rather universal. And it was athletes, actors and actresses, and then probably politicians on either a national or local level. And there really wasn't an opportunity to become a micro, quote unquote, celebrity, because there was no way to go beyond any kind of geographical constraints, right? Like if you were really big in Ann Arbor, Michigan, it was really hard to go to Chicago, which was very close statistically, but you'd have to start all over again. But now I feel like those that are the influencers in this space, or those that are the thought leaders or whatever noun you want to use in that place, it's really more so about understanding that I'm serving this audience specifically. And if I'm not for you, then that's okay, because I'm not meant to serve you. So it's people carving out niches and staying consistent with that audience.
I think that's so important, because you see it in the job hunting front as well, where people try to be everything to everyone. And if you try to please everybody all the time, then you're going to lose the few people who do like your brand, they like your vibe, because of the fact that you're trying to cater to everyone instead of developing a specific niche.
I couldn't agree more. And then the idea behind that is oftentimes people fear alienation, right? They say, well, if I serve only law firms, or if I'm seeking out this specific position within this company, and that's really what I'm going to put on my resume or share on LinkedIn to attract that person, they fear that other people will look at that and go, oh, you know what, I was going to hire you, or I was going to look at your company and to consider it, but I see that you are only serving this niche. What I find is the exact opposite. The more that we can declare niches that are at least tangential to other niches, where people say, well, if you do law firms, you could probably do my engineering firm as well, then I think there are actually more opportunities by simply saying that this is who I'm set out to serve. And then people will get there in their own mind, as far as if they feel like perhaps you could benefit their industry or what they're trying to hire for instead.
Yeah, I remember years ago, I was doing some sort of program on how to grow your business. And I remember people were so resistant to choosing a specific niche, because there's this mentality of lack of, oh gosh, there's not going to be enough business in law firms or financial service companies to, you know, to make a living, or to, you know, I see many people in the law firm world where they try to specialize in so many different areas that they really dilute their value, where you get the people who are often the most highly paid and sometimes the happiest in some cases is the people who just know their product, know their service, and know their line of work better than anybody else, because then that becomes something that becomes priceless in the market.
I agree 100%. And especially if you were to take that niche idea and say, I'm going to get well-known in this space, and let's just say law, because we're going down that road for a little bit, you have to kind of graduate to get to a point, right? Like where I met you and where you spoke, that was a big stage at a big level. And oftentimes people might look at you and say, Jen, how did you get to that point? And you could answer them by saying, well, I started at one level smaller and one level smaller than that before, and work your way up. But what I love about, once you've reached that peak of the pyramid like you have in law, it's a lot easier to jump to the next industry, and you don't have to start over, because you've already proven that you can serve that kind of audience in that space. So I feel like oftentimes people kind of undersell themselves to say, if I've accomplished a lot in one industry, it's rather easy to find similarities to another industry and just simply insert yourself in that conversation also.
Oh, that's a brilliant point that you bring up, because as you and I both know, we obviously, for our listeners who might not be aware, Spence and I had met at a speaking engagement at a conference in Arizona. And it is true. It's you speak at that conference, then you get invited to other conferences and so on and so forth until other industries begin to invite you to speak. And then it's amazing the networking and the connections that you get a chance to make and just to grow. Speaking of networks, social networks or otherwise, it's important to grow your online network and your in-person network. Because you and I could have easily been sitting there having dinner that day before we were supposed to speak and not have exchanged information. But we both realized, wow, you know, Spence, I love what you're doing and I've heard great things about your speaking. This would be something valuable. And how many of us don't take that time to follow up with somebody, whether it's an email or on a social network, and we just drop the ball and then that connection is lost.
I feel like that's a wonderful adjunct to the normal networking activities too, because oftentimes, to again go to that conference idea, before social media or before we really had email en masse, right, you'd have to meet someone at a conference, and then the subsequent year, unless you made phone calls to them, you kind of have to start over, right? You say, oh, you know, we haven't talked for a year. What's been going on? But now with social, if we just use a nominal amount of time with purpose, right, as opposed to just going on social media and mindlessly scrolling and building a negative association in our minds, this is just a waste of time, to post with purpose or to send messages with purpose to say, you know, it was really great meeting you at this conference. I'd love to pay attention to what you're doing here. If it's okay with you, I'll just drop you a note every month or every quarter, let you know what I'm doing. Love to hear what you're doing. And then the subsequent year, when you see them again, you don't have to start over. You can build upon all of those connections. And it was just such a wonderful way to do that efficiently over all these years with conferences compared to what we used to do.
I know, between like just remembering the next time you bump into somebody at a conference and you're scratching your head saying, I vaguely remember that person possibly from a year or 2 years ago when I saw them at the last event.
Yes. And then you have the classic navel staring, right? Everybody's looking at the other people's badges and going, what was your name? How should I remember you? And coming up with associations, eh?
Yeah. And I love something that you and I had talked about offline in our pre-show check-in, and that was talking about putting the spotlight on other people. So tell me a little bit about that. What would be the value in highlighting other people in your network?
Oh, man, this is my biggest soapbox thing, Jen, is that I feel like with social media, people really have three choices. They can either say nothing, right? They can just consume information, and that's fine. It's a really great use of ways to get educated, you know, with time and that kind of stuff. But number two is oftentimes people look at it as an opportunity to highlight themselves. You know, look at me, look at my accomplishments, and that's great. You know, I think people who are in your network, they want to be proud of you. But the third way is to say, you know what, I understand now that we no longer have a finite amount of media outlets. They're not controlled by billboards or newspaper or TV. It's we all have the ability to say anything we want at any time. And there are so few people who are using the opportunity to say, wow, you know what? If I could just cast away from myself the spotlight on other people and highlight what they're doing professionally or personally or their organizations or benevolent or nonprofits about which I care, that's a really, really great way to be a conveyor or a purveyor of great news about other people. And that builds on itself because people look to you then to say, well, what's next? What else? And then eventually people come to you and go, hey, I have some good news. Could you share it about me? And I know Bill Gates had famously said back in 1996 that Microsoft was becoming a media company. And no one really knew what he was talking about at that time, because what media? We know we had CD-ROMs, but he saw this all coming. And now if we look at this way and use that Microsoft example, say we truly are, even as an individual, a media company. And if we highlight other people, it's just a wonderful way to garner interest for them. And then you as that purveyor of the good news, it garners interest for you as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I remember one of my very first social media mentors. I was an early adopter of many things like Twitter and LinkedIn back when it first came out. And one of the techniques that I kind of came up with, which is along the same lines of what you do, is what I call the 30-30-30 rule, which is 30% posting personal things about yourself so people feel related to you as an individual person, 30% sharing things about other people's articles related to the industry, just like you said, paying it forward, helping to highlight other people, helping to maintain and grow those connections. But also in doing so, when you're sharing other people's content, it sets you up as the expert, even by the means of knowing that information. And then the last 30% is you could be selling to that audience as far as, hey, I'm going to be speaking at this conference or check out this. And then my role was that the last 10% was spent commenting, liking, and interacting with the followers. But that might be outdated by now because I kind of made that up about 10 years ago.
No, I love that. What I love about that more than anything else is a former sales guy who did 3,000 in-person sales meetings between 08 and 15.
Wow.
You understand that. Yeah, it's a lot, right? Yeah. You just understand, like, it's about mechanizing it, right? Because oftentimes if we get people excited and say, hey, go do this on social media, and they get those great results, there's this old adage in sales that things work so well that you stop doing them, and they lose their luster. But you know, if we do business development, there's a lot of stuff that's mechanical, that it's admittedly it's kind of drudgery, right? Like, you have to make your phone calls and send your emails. And I feel like social media through the lens of business has to be that exact same thing. So giving people, like you did, that formulaic approach that gives them a context in which to play, and then they just do their activities and they move on.
Yeah, and I think the same is true with job hunting, is that what we're talking about now, what Spence and I are referring to, is that we're not just talking about a business. You are a business. You are a walking billboard for yourself. And some people really resist it. When I'm having this conversation with people at conferences or in different social settings, people will kind of bristle at the idea. Well, I am not a billboard, nor am I a salesperson, Jen. I don't want to discuss that. But if you keep resisting it, you're going to wonder why 5 or 10 years from now, the jobs that you covet are not the jobs that you're getting, because it's the people who have the online brand that is tantalizing and exciting and state of the art that are going to be the ones who keep getting offered the best jobs over and over and over again with little to no effort.
That's such a great point. And, you know, anybody who has reservations about using the word sales, I completely get it, because the connotation is there. And the way that you framed it, I think, is wonderful. And the fact that it's not just the ability to build your personal brand, but also get people to think about you more often than not, because when that need arises, there's a classic saying that says that the music is not on the radio, right? This is a wonderful example right now, because the radio is always doing something. It's always there. It's always just waiting for that signal. And if you tune in the radio to the right thing, that's what eventually is there, right? Because the music is in the air. It's all over us. So that's mm-hmm. that same idea where people are ready to tune in that radio to that station. You're there already, as opposed to waiting for that need to arise.
I love that. I don't think I've ever heard that analogy before. And it's so true, because it just depends on whatever we're focusing on, whatever we're paying attention to. And at any moment you can tune in, but they can't tune in if the music's not, like, if you don't have your music out there, then nobody will ever find you.
You're exactly right. And because a lot of what we do on social or personal branding or anything digital doesn't have immediate feedback, meaning content creation or putting yourself out there, we oftentimes think that people aren't listening, but they are. They just don't respond. They're actually there. They're seeing you. They're listening to you, but they just don't let you know that they are.
Mm. So what are some ways that you could have yourself stand out on social media, aside from perhaps highlighting other people, some of the things we've already discussed? Are there other tips that you would recommend to people?
I think it's giving away your best stuff for free by way of using your stories, because all of us, you know, by definition, have unique experiences about anything. And if we frame it through the lens of, if I'm going to share something, is it going to assist other people with X? And I think to fill in that X, to make them feel smarter or to be thoughtful or to be entertaining or to be motivational or whatever the goal is of that post, understand that it truly is about serving the audience, as opposed to maybe you just posting something that might be innocuous. So the goal is to say, if I can help people get better by way of my experiences, that would be the reason that they perhaps would look to you from a thought leadership perspective, or maybe from the next position they might have available as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I feel like the thing that really tends to strike a chord that I've noticed is authenticity, where if people share authentic situations, life problems, or they pose an inquiry. I've noticed over the years that experimenting with social media, the more that you invite participation and inquiry and the ability for your followers or people who are friends with you on different social sites to interact with you, the greater the leverage that you have. I would love your insights on that.
It's really about audience gathering, right? And it's a distinct, when you have the trust of an audience, you have the ability to take them the direction that you want. And they feel like through the lens of what it is that you're offering from a context standpoint, right? You frame the question or you frame the conversation and say, I'd like your input. They know that you're there to support them and know that you're teeing up the ball for them to say something, because people have a lot of stuff to say, but they oftentimes just won't go out on the limb and say it themselves. They need to be prompted in some capacity. So understanding that audience, prompting them with questions, and then showing that, and that you support them as they post and as they share what they know. And that's a wonderful way to foster just great communication.
Yeah, I remember when LinkedIn was first launched about 10 years or so ago, one of the things that I noticed was there was somebody who posted an inquiry in a group on LinkedIn. And I kid you not, she got over 1,000 responses. And it was about the fairness of wage and what happened. And now here it is 10 years later, and you have things like the Equal Wage and Pay Act in California and in other states that you wonder, like that one inquiry, what did that create that she had 1,000 responses? And now we're actually seeing change in the market. It's pretty amazing what social media can do and the changes and that you can make, not only for yourself, but, you know, in a much more far-reaching way.
That's so true. And I'm guessing, I don't want to say that she wasn't super talented with this one post, but I'm guessing she probably had other stuff that she had done that didn't garner that kind of reaction, right? But she didn't get dissuaded by that. And she just kept posting. She had that one thing that caught fire and went out there. And that would be the other emphasis point that I want to bring up again that you had mentioned with your 30-30-30-10 is just understand that a lot of stuff that you put out there, it might be brilliant or funny or interesting or might give every reason for someone to care about you, but they're just not there at the right time. And it's about that consistent activity and understanding that the more that you do it, the more that you will have that chance to have that, you know, quote unquote viral post.
And so let's talk about that for a minute, because what difference does it make if we're talking Twitter, Insta, Facebook, or LinkedIn? Does it matter what times and what days you post?
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give this to all your listeners. Here's a secret sauce, right? 9 a.m. on a Tuesday following a bank holiday on a Monday, where as long as the Monday night football game didn't go into overtime, then, no, it's that kind of tactical stuff drives me crazy, right? Because it's like, if people, and this is what I don't like about it, like, although it may be steeped in truth, you know, perhaps even for the person who wrote the piece or created the cool infographic or whatever, when people follow what they think is the best practice and they don't get the results they want, they just stop. They go, you know what? I did everything right. I listened to this guru who told me what to do. I did the perfect post. I used 17 hashtags and I tagged 4 people and it just didn't go anywhere. I'm going to just give up on this. That's the last thing I want people to do is get tactical. But what I can tell you, and this is more anecdotal than empirical, but I can back this up a little bit, okay, is that I've never once in my life ever seen anybody mindlessly scrolling through LinkedIn on their phone. And this happens on Facebook and Instagram a lot. Twitter, not as much because people are trying to read, you know, conversations. But people go on LinkedIn, Jen, with purpose, right? They're at work. They're in work mode doing something work-related. And I find that if people are concerned about how much time is it going to take me to post something on social media, we find that LinkedIn posts have a much, much, much longer shelf life because when people go on LinkedIn, it's much more infrequent and they spend a lot more time per use of LinkedIn. So I would err on that side for those that are trying to do more business or maybe find that next job.
Yeah, I love that. And it's funny because just before we got on this show, I'm doing an interview on Monday with one of my favorite teachers, actually, David Guillaume. We had him on the show on April 2nd. And he does these great little energy boosts like, hey, what's the energy of the week? Just a quick little thought. And so he hosts a weekly radio show. I think it's on UBNradio.com on channel 1 on Monday at 10, if anybody wants to tune in. And one of the things they were talking about, I said, oh, you know, if I'm going to do some social posts about this before the show, do you have target times? And they were saying the exact same thing. They said, you know what? One night we happened to post at 8 p.m. on a Saturday and got the most likes and responses ever. And another day we tried Tuesday at 8 a.m. And, you know, so it really is, like you said, there's no secret sauce. It's what has something go viral. It's just that certain something, that certain je ne sais quoi, and it just takes that one person where if you happen to get one influencer or one person who likes your meme, likes your article or does something, all of a sudden, then you get this flood of responses that can be very unexpected despite whatever time you post.
And that's such an operative thing that you said is the right people, because if it's 14 super, super highly targeted people that you desperately want to know who you are, as opposed to 14,000 just people who have no interest in you outside of that funny thing that you shared, I think it's oftentimes not a volume game. It truly is about targeting and understanding that it's just reaching the right people.
Yeah, I think it was one of Malcolm Gladwell's books. I'm drawing a blank. I don't think it was The Tipping Point, but it was talking about salespeople, mavens, and then the influencers. And to his point, like I have some people in my network, like Kevin Carlin is somebody who's amazing on social media. He does exactly what you suggest. He shines the spotlight on other people. And you're better off if you're job hunting, if you're looking to grow a business, to have one Kevin Carlin in your network who can help connect you with the right people than to try and get the attention of 100 other people who don't have the same leverage. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can't even add anything to what you said. It was so good. I'll just let that go.
I'm just going to have you on the show all the time, Spence. So talk to me about some of the social media do's and don'ts. I mean, let's hope that we got this far along where things like Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook have been around long enough that hopefully we know the do's and don'ts. But let's just give us a little teaser of some of your favorite do's and don'ts on social media.
I think the quicker that people can acclimate themselves to the use of video on every platform, the better off that they're going to be. And there's a couple reasons for this. The number one is that a lot of the platforms are erring toward the side of showing more video because they understand that it creates engagement and it keeps people on a platform longer, right? Because think about the motivation for any of the social media platforms. Their goal is to get you there and then to keep you because they can collect data and then sell you ads. And the more video that we provide to them, the better off we are from a partnership standpoint, because that's really the goal of the social media platform is to take that tax, right, to take the ads and then offset it with the content that people want. And video is just, it's better. Now, oftentimes people say, well, what do I do or how do I get over my camera shyness or whatever? And it's really about taking that opportunity to say, just take a step back and go, how difficult did it used to be to do video in any capacity? And just give yourself a little credit for not getting on board right away because it's difficult, but know that that's almost impossible, you know, 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago, to take a video and put it out to people that may benefit from hearing from you. And I feel like the idea of having to be perfect in that capacity, whether it's the perfect light or sound or whatever, and the more that you are just genuine and say, hey, I'd just like to share this thing with you that I had figured out, again, like the post we talked about before, where you have a specific goal for that audience to say, this is what I want you to know. I feel like that is the greatest, you know, piece of advice I can give right now is get on video in some capacity and just have people put your face to your voice to what it is that you're sharing and then see as your personal brand really starts to take off.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful advice. In fact, my same teacher, David Guillem, just started on Insta in the last month or so doing these great little 30-second clips. And he's exploding. And even my chiropractor, you think of somebody who's a chiropractor, and I use these examples because whether you're a doctor, whether you're a salesperson, I think it's equally as relevant to help build your brand, to use videos as leverage. My chiropractor now pays for his mortgage every month using his YouTube channel where he just started off doing these special Gonstead wellness videos. Dr. Raheem, if anybody out there wants to Google him, but he has done amazing things where nobody else just thought to do it. And there's always an audience out there who wants to hear from you. And if you don't put it out there, you'll never be able to find that audience.
That was really eloquent, what you said at the very end. That makes a lot of sense. You'll never know what that audience looks like unless you produce content for them. You're right.
Yeah. And I think that honestly, Spence, we all come from a place of fear. As human beings, we're designed to be told, you can't do that. You can't make money doing loving what you do. What's that video game one, Twitch, that somebody once told the founder of Twitch, for those of you who don't know, it's like a video game platform where you pay to watch other people play video games. And I'm sure whoever invented, I don't know the founder of that company, but whoever first came up with that idea, their parents probably said, you're never going to be able to make money playing video games. And you know that person is laughing right now and saying, really? I'll show you. You know, look at this multi-million, billion-dollar company.
Mm-hmm. And that plays out in any regard, right? Because people might say, well, I don't have the talent to play professional sports or esports in this case, right, with video games. But I feel like that the more that people can break down something that's digestible for other people, they want to cheer for people, right? People like to be fans of things. And if you can be that micro celebrity for a half dozen people who get served by what it is that you do, that's a wonderful way to start and at least grow from there.
Yeah. And even for me, I'm big into the spiritual side of things too, is that paying it forward. Like we all have at least one thing we're good at. You know, you might have a gift, and if you take that time to share that gift in some capacity, it could be, you know, sharing a quick little video or a thought. We all don't think we're worth it, that what we have to say doesn't matter. And I think that's what stops some of us from really reaching this pinnacle of success that's available to us, is that somewhere along the line, we told ourselves or our inner voice tells us, you're not worth it. You can't do it. What you have to say isn't important. And I challenge you, like, what if what you had to say was important to even one person? Would that be worth posting? And I would argue that it is.
And you know, one thought, if I may, Jen, about that is I used to play in a rock band many, many, many years ago. And this might be kind of fun for your California listeners, especially the fun fact, the world's largest music festival is in my home city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which many people don't know. It's 11 days, 11 stages, 700 bands. It's a huge, huge festival. And when we aspired to play there as our band, I cold called the Summerfest office. And the woman who answered the phone, whose name is Stacey Olson, who's still in the business, she said, "What is it?" I said, "Hey, how do we play there?" And she goes, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, isn't there some kind of application that we fill out or whatever?" She goes, "No, it's who you know." And I go, "Well, I know you, I guess. Can we at least start from there?" And I seriously, Jen, I asked the question of, "Well, can you just break it down for me? Tell me what I need to do to get our band to play here." And she told us, and we did that. And we got to play there. And once you play the world's largest music festival, yeah, you never go back, right? You can always go to anywhere else you want to play and say, "Hey, we played the world's largest music festival." They're like, "Oh, cool. You must be good enough for us," right? But the point is, I went and asked the question, did what she told me to do, and then fulfilled that. And many of the peer bands that we had that were way better than we were talent-wise asked us, "Well, how did you play Summerfest?" And I said, "Well, I asked. And I go, "Jim, but here's the big thing." I go, "You should ask too." And they go, "I don't think we're ready yet. Like we really need to get this better song. We need a little bit better equipment, or we need to play these other gigs first." And understand that any of us, you know, because we have those talents, and we were certainly not even close to being a talented band, but we asked the question and then fulfilled the need. So as opposed to us just thinking, "I'm going to put this thing out there and it's just going to be a void," find out who has control of the audience that you already want, a la Summerfest or an online publication or a magazine or a website or a speaker's, you know, bureau or a conference or whatever, and say, "How can I best serve the audience that you already have control over, you already have the trust over?" Because that's what people need, right? They need content that's relevant and contextual. And if you fill that need, they will put you in front of that audience, and then you can start to serve them in a greater capacity.
Yeah, I think that's such great advice. I think it's just taking action. I mean, we can all sit around. I love to manifest. I'm one of the queens of doing affirmations and manifestations. But if you sit your butt on your couch all day and you sit there saying, "I am creating the possibility of making $1 million," if you don't get off the couch or make that phone call or ask that question, even if it's fear of rejection, of, you know, getting somebody who's going to say, "No, are you crazy?" You're going to get that one person who's going to give you that gem, that piece of wisdom. And the other thing I'll say too about social networking meeting normal networking, I have a folder on my Outlook that's called People I Meet on Planes. And I have sat next to some of the most extraordinary people on planes, Tony Blair's people. I actually sat next to, I didn't even know who she was. Do you know who Carrie Fisher is? I think she was Princess Leia.
Sure.
Yeah. So I didn't even know who she was. We sat next to each other on a plane, wound up bumping into her at the hotel she recommended to me later. But you never know who you're going to sit next to. I sat next to one of the original investors in Uber. And this was about 6 or 7 years ago, I think at CES or a major conference. And the guy said, "You know, we are shocked as an investment company of how successful Uber is becoming." Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing that you never know. And then to follow up, though, and make sure you don't lose track and immediately follow up with those people on the social sites as well.
I agree. And along those lines, just to you know, take what you said and expand on it just a bit. You know, what you had implied is that oftentimes we talk ourselves out of success, right? Because we either don't initiate the conversation on the plane, or we don't do the follow-up to go, "Oh, you know, we met them and it was a fleeting conversation. They don't want to hear from us." But I feel like people talk themselves out of success so often, but they don't have, meaning people, you don't have the right to determine how talented you are. Like, you should really allow the marketplace to determine that instead. And if the marketplace tells you no, well, then you know, right? But we shouldn't be the ones that are saying, "Oh, you know, I don't think this is good enough," because you'd be surprised, right? You'd be surprised, a la what that investor in Uber said, like, "Yeah, we didn't know. Like, we just kind of thought it was going to be okay, but not to become this behemoth that it has been."
Yeah, I think that there's so many surprising things about social media and about networking that we just don't even anticipate until you put yourself out there. And heck, why not experiment with it? One of my social media mentors years ago just told me, "Jen, just test different posts with questions, with memes, with quotes, see what people respond to and see what lines up with your brand and how you want to be perceived." And so it's part of its trial and error until you figure out, what does your brand taste like, feel like? What do people gravitate towards? And, you know, and then start to fine tune it from there.
I agree. And, you know, the earlier stuff, too, that you put out, you'll look back on that and go, oh, that was really interesting that, you know, that's what I used to think was important, or that's how I used to speak, or here's some really old videos that I'm embarrassed of or whatever. But I feel like when people are putting themselves out there, you're going to establish a small audience. At first, that audience is going to grow. But those who saw your early stuff, they're going to root for you. And they're eventually going to come up to you and say, hey, Jen, you know, I saw your stuff from 4 years ago. And to see what you've become now, it's just been so great to be on this ride with you and to experience this with you. So even though a lot of people are in the dark when they're not letting you know that they're paying attention, they are rooting for you. And eventually, when you do reach that peak or that plateau that you've been trying to achieve, they're going to look back and say, I used to know you when, you know, you were nothing when you just started. And
yeah.
That's just a wonderful way to frame that, you know?
So what would you say is one of the more surprising things for you about social media spend?
The fact that many of those people that are in business, especially in professional services, are really big early adopters of social media and very big early adopters of technology, but yet they don't understand the scope when it comes to their own use in business. And like I said, after doing all of these sales meetings and in-person meetings, you know, phone calls, emails, that kind of stuff, the fact that in my mind, this is why we wrote the book, if people are not thinking about you, there's no possible way that they're ever going to give you that job or think about you from a business standpoint because they're not thinking about you at all, right? And I feel like it's just such a wonderful way to even let people know that you exist as opposed to not, because that's where people are fundamentally paying attention a lot of the time when it comes to business or when it comes to recruiting or whatever. So just showing up and having people go, oh yeah, Jen, like that's the way that this is such an edge case kind of thing. But the more we can get people to think about you, especially in a positive light, it's just a wonderful way to use it and remind people that you are in fact around.
Brilliant advice, Ben. Well, we could talk for hours upon hours about networking, social media. Tell me, are there any other questions I didn't ask you or points that you'd love our listeners to take away from today's show?
I think it's, you know what, I think we really covered everything, Jen. It was a pretty wide-ranging interview, and I think you do such a good job with asking questions and adding to the questions that I can't think of anything that perhaps we missed in this case.
Well, then I did my job and you did your job, so we can just call it a day and let everybody go off into the sunset and enjoy their Mondays. But all kidding aside, I do really want to thank you, Spence, and I want to make sure that everybody knows where they can find your book, if they want to hire you as a speaker, perhaps hire you as a social media consultant for their company. Where would people do that?
Probably the best place is my website, which is SpencerXSmith.com. So Spencer, the letter X, and then Smith, and then the same thing on all of the social channels as well.
Perfect, Spence. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show. And I definitely got some new tidbits and pearls of wisdom from you as far as how to approach my own social network. So really appreciate all of that. And invite everybody to tune in next week on Monday. And we're actually going to be talking to Ellie Krug, who was also with us at the conference, talking a little bit about diversity in the workplace and what that means for all of us. If you missed any portion of today's show, we invite you to check on iTunes later in the week under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. And you can go ahead and find and download any of our prior episodes on there, subscribe, listen at your leisure. And then you can also find it at the bottom of the LA Talk Radio Get Yourself the Job page is the archive section where you can find a full list of any prior shows that we've done. And you can download and listen to those shows as well. So thanks again for joining us today, Spence. And thank you so much to everybody who tuned in today's show.
Thanks so much for having me, Jen.
All right, take care.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.